Welcome to VR in Education.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting episode of VR in Education, where we dive deep into virtual reality for teaching and learning. Today, we have the pleasure of talking to Eric Chamberlain. He's an educator with an extensive experience in tech integration and learning design. I'm especially excited to talk to Eric because of his expertise in learning design. This resonates so deeply with me, especially when it comes to the adoption of XR. So he's here today to talk about implementing XR into learning effectively. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thank you very much, Craig. I'm very, very happy to be here.
I always love to start with an origin story, and that usually surrounds what led you to get interested in VR, or maybe, you know, if you've dabbled in AR as well.
Sure. Not unlike other people, my initial taste of VR did not go very well. I was director of digital learning in the Salem, Massachusetts school district, and the middle school one of the middle school principals there was fairly entrepreneurial, and he raised a bunch of money because he wanted to have a VR lab. Didn't really have a program behind it, didn't really have much of a sense of what that meant, but he raised the money and they bought the equipment, and then they came to me and said, "Can you help us put it together?" And I said, "Well, no, not really. I don't know anything about that." And I did a little bit of research. Now, this would have been, I think, the Quest 1, which would have been the tethered headset and required a massive computer. And so anyways, they cobbled it all together and I walked into the room. Nobody was around and I said, "Oh, okay, I want to try this out." And very, very few apps downloaded. So I created an account and I downloaded the first thing that was on there, which unfortunately was the roller coaster app. And as you know well, the next 20 minutes were horrible and I put it down and I said, "Okay, this is not for me." I did go back in another day and I found some other things, but again, the tethered part, the fact that it was really complicated to load the material and find the apps didn't really excite me that much. So fast forward to right now, I currently live in the southwest of France and I work online for the online part of the Avenues, the World School. And my supervisor approached me, gosh, now it's coming up on a little over 2 years ago, and put me in charge of a pilot project to see where VR was as a medium, as an educational tool. And, so he directed myself and another coworker to buy whatever we needed, VR headsets, 360 camera, how hard is it to capture and create content, what's out there, et cetera, et cetera. So I did that. And this time it was certainly a much more rich experience. This was the Quest 2 headset, an Insta360 camera, which I had already owned before, but I had never had the ability to view that content in VR, and saw some promising things and got pretty excited about it. However, I ran into a complication, and that is our school has students in 42 different countries around the world. And it's impossible to secure or choose a model of headset that is going to be available to all of those students. So therefore, I pivoted to what could we do what might allow us to gain some of the advantages of VR, but be a little bit more open platform, open source, if you will. And that's where I stumbled on the WebXR technology. I actually, because I live in France, I had the ability to order, and I own a Pico 4 headset as well. And so to kind of testing out if students are going to be using different headsets around the world, how can we manage them? And so I dabbled into ManageXR and some of the other platforms for those kinds of things. And then that just kind of spun off as I learned more about WebXR and then specifically Frame VR. I got pretty excited about the possibilities. And for the rest of this conversation, we'll talk about where that has taken me.
Yeah. And in that journey, which you described well, you also started to don a second hat, which is a consultancy for what you call XR Tools for Education. Was this journey that you went through to help out this online school a result of that? Or what made you then start to trigger, hey, you know, I can go into some consultancy too in regards to this tool or medium?
No, it was more born out of the fact that I've been doing educational technology for quite a long time. And I have had notebooks full of ideas, and I kick myself every day that I should have gotten into the ring, if you will, of whether it's a blog, a YouTube channel, whatever it is that you want to talk about that has been successful over the last 15 years. I've thought about it. I've started several. I just didn't have the time and the focus and the ability to really put the attention in for that to be successful. And I have that now. So as I learned more for my job, I was also realizing that A, this is a tremendous opportunity. B, there's not a lot of people talking about it yet right now. C, I have the time and the focus and the energy. So let's see if I can put those three perfect storms together. And, you know, who knows? We'll see where it might take me. And also just getting to the point where, you know, I'm not young, not super old either, and I have plenty of time left in the game. And I would like to do what I can to help move educational technology forward, which I've always been interested in doing even before I got into education. So that's how I came out to start the XR Tools for Ed website.
I want to talk about the immersive learning platform that you use a lot and post on LinkedIn. You know, there's a lot out there. There's several immersive learning platforms, you know, for kids especially and content creation. There's Roblox. For some educators, they gravitate to Engage. But you've been doing most of your work in Frame VR. What made you pick this 3D spatial platform?
That's a great question. In the research that I did for the pilot project for my job, I had open reins to really test it all. There was no specific guidelines. It was just go out there and see what's out there. And I thoroughly enjoyed the process of searching. As you said, every week it felt like there was a new, you know, web XR based social connection learning platform. Some of them use different names. But I really zeroed down into three to put a lot of time and energy into. At the time, it was Mozilla Hubs, Engage, and Frame VR. And that was based on their terms of service around how they treat, you know, for education, because that's an important component to keep in mind. Spatial, for example, is a wonderful platform, has great, great features, and is growing and advancing quite quickly. But their terms of service is a minimum of 18 years old. So that kind of wipes it off the list. Then when I really started to dial in and look at those three, not only was I keeping WebXR and the fact that initially we really are not going to use VR headsets very, very much, then Frame really rose above those in terms of the desktop and iPad experience. Engage, I've been in some wonderful experiences in Engage in the VR headset. And if I was in a program such as I think you did or continue to work in, where you have a classroom and a lab and students come in and they're going to use VR headsets, then I agree. I think Engage would be at the top of my list. Then as my side project, XR Tools for Ed, and then moving into XR Docs came about, the one feature that rose Frame above the rest is the ability to embed what I consider legacy or Web 2.0 apps inside of an immersive 3D spatial web experience. Because I've been doing this for quite a long time, and I know teachers get very comfortable with the tool set that they're comfortable with, and they put a lot of time and energy and they get momentum and they're, it's not complacency, but it's, you know, they don't have a lot of time to throw that all away and start from scratch. And in a way, I kind of pictured that's what's necessary in today's world. And I think you would agree with me to go from a Chromebook program, for example, which is the predominant one-to-one program around the world, certainly in the United States, and move to a VR program. You have to kind of leave behind the Padlets and the Edpuzzles and all of that content that you've worked years for to develop. And for me, that's just not realistic. So that's how Frame VR really kind of became my main focus and haven't turned back since. Very, very happy with it.
Yeah. You know, there's, as you alluded to and, you know, brought up, there are some advanced tools that eventually teachers who are just getting started and have sort of their routines and comforts will hopefully get into. Let's talk about Frame VR and the wish list. So what about Frame VR do you still hope will, you know, come down their development pipeline then?
I'm an active member of their Discord community, and it's interesting to hear some of the things that other people wish for, you know, because everybody's coming at this from a different angle. Some are in the corporate world, some are in the education, but maybe higher ed world. For me, my number one goal right now is for them to keep everything that they have. and because what is just blown me away since the AI revolution started 18 months ago is how quickly some tools will just pivot away from something they do well and a tool set that they have offered for a long time and think that they're advancing and moving on, but they don't realize that they've left a whole user base behind with saying, wait, you know, what am I going to do now that you have great, you've added these AI features and that's all well and good, but I really needed those three things that you sunsetted. So that would be my first goal. Moving on from there, just recently they have integrated the ability to utilize the motion in the webcam. So if you use a Ready Player Me avatar, for example, and you are speaking, the mouth generally tracks your speaking, or if you're shocked and you open your mouth, or if you're smiling, then that's reactive in the Ready Player Me avatar, which adds to a level of immersion, which is awesome. I think they are probably tracking towards bringing in the hand motions as well. So if I could be tapping things or interacting with buttons using my arms on a Chromebook or a laptop, doesn't matter, that would be a nice addition. As I was typing out the notes for this question, I wrote down that if we could take Kai XR and Zoe Immersive and Frame VR and throw them in a room and let them have a baby, then I think that baby, that Frankenstein baby, would be the best available total tool set across all mediums. So Zoe has that awesome ability to add gravity and true interactivity for things that you can grab. The Kai XR has the ability to build a lesson plan, almost like a learning management system, so that the user gets in there and is guided through the learning experience. And then Frame has all the advantages that that it currently has in its tool set. So if we could put those three together, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, one of my favorites in Frame is, again, when you push this medium to teachers, one of the things that, you know, both you and others emphasize is the opportunity to put a learner in a contextually relevant environment. So if you're studying ancient Rome, you can put them in a scene that is similar to or equivalent to ancient Rome. And that means, you know, either building from scratch a environment, or if you're lucky, pulling a template from a template library that someone has. Now, you alluded to this, teachers are so busy, like the opportunity cost for them to build from scratch is quite high because they're busy marking papers and dealing with all the little minutiae of being a teacher. So having in Frame VR the ability to create an AI background, which, you know, in fancy terms, a skybox, is brilliant because you don't necessarily need a massive library of environments, because AI can help you create this wonderful background or skybox. So that's one of my favorite features.
Absolutely. I was I have tried their 3D mesh piece because I was that part, right, you know, go from just the 360 sphere to actually having an environment that a user can move inside of. And it's close there. It's close. It's tantalizingly close. But with the advancements and how rapidly those things are coming, I agree with you. I think that that's not far away. At the same time, my basic tenet of my, you know, my thesis right now is to go from where the majority of teachers are right now and to begin to move forward. The Skybox 360 sphere is absolutely adequate. And then beyond that, just build a basic, you know, really the environment at this point is a nice to have. Some of the, obviously I know Andrew at EduMetaverse and Nick at 3DLES, they've got teams, they've got different people that are building these things in Blender. And that's awesome. They look great. And I'm not taking anything away from that. But the average fourth grade teacher who's been using Google Classroom for the last 10 years and is hooked on HyperDocs and is just kind of stuck in that cycle, to make that first step forward, the environment is probably not the thing to worry about right away. Let's just bring the tools that you have and get the kids immersed just in a space, moving forward, left, back, and right, making choices. We're going to talk a little bit about active learning here in a few minutes. Just physically moving into the space has a cognitive difference than a 2D flat Google Doc. So
that's a great segue into my next question and comment. I love the fact that you coined this term, which I haven't seen before, which is why I can confidently say you coined it. And that is this term you call XR Docs. So, you know, if we go in order of how things maybe worked in Web 2.0 and then 3.0, teachers started maybe in the early 2000s creating what we might call a Google Doc. Then they moved slowly towards something called a HyperDoc. And now we have something that you coined called an XR Doc. Walk us through that, especially for someone who maybe hasn't followed this timeline.
Absolutely. I was lucky enough to be in Web 1.0 in one of the very first one-to-one programs in the state of Maine in 2001. And we were excited to find WebQuest, which would be the grandfather of all of these, right? Organized, because back then, authoring to the web was incredibly difficult. To learn HTML, you needed an FTP, blah, blah, blah. It was challenging. So the web, from an educational standpoint, was just this massive collection of links, and a teacher literally was writing URLs on the whiteboard, and kids had to transcribe those because there was no email, there was not... Okay, so I'm dating myself a little bit, but it's important to understand that that's where I started and cut my teeth in the classroom in a one-to-one program. Then, as you said, when Web 2 came along, Google turned the world upside down, if you will, with the G Suite and its connectivity and its collaboration. And then they layered on top of that Google Classroom, which I've never necessarily been a huge fan of, but I understand how beautiful it is for teachers to be able to share out documents and organize their classroom. And then the three women, I can't remember their names right off the top of my head, but put together the idea of, okay, let's take a lesson or an experience and keep it streamlined and formatted in a single place. So it was a basic low-level website development, if you will, delivered in the form of either a Google Doc or a Google Slide called a HyperDoc. And it's fantastic. There, again, I don't necessarily have anything against HyperDocs. They are widely available. They're pretty easy to put together. But when you find out what's possible in the immersive spatial web, and you go back and look at what some of those offer today, it's time. It's time to shake that up. Now, I didn't set out to coin any, you know, to develop any new things. It just organically happened. As I was working, I was realizing, again, it comes back to the ability to embed. You can go back to one of my earliest YouTube videos I've ever uploaded was talking about how Genially, which is it's a great interactive lesson tool. And I created a whole thing about instructional design and how the beautiful it was that Genially embeds other experiences and it keeps the learner in a single place. If I had one drawback on the HyperDocs is, yeah, sure, you organize all of the collection in one page, but every time the student clicks on those links, it requires opening another tab. And we all know how people are with tab management and trying to stay organized. So if you can take all those tools, your Padlets, your Edpuzzles, your YouTube videos, and allow students to be able to click on those and interact with them, but not leave the page, awesome. When you throw in the ability to add spatial audio, other things that the interactive web allows, now we're starting to really cook with fire. And I just see it as a tremendous, tremendous next step.
Give us an example, and you've had several that you've put that I've seen on LinkedIn, and I'm sure you've shared them other places, of what a HyperDoc experience or lesson might look like. And again, I love this. I love this notion of, A, you know, teachers can't just jump into the deep end, or the average teacher anyway, for this medium. And therefore, how can we put on training wheels, or how can we give them baby steps to get into immersive learning? Hence the XR doc. And secondly, because you come from a learning design perspective, how can we make it more conducive to how we deliver a lesson to kids? So walk us through an example of what an XR doc experience might be for a subject or a topic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, when I created the video launching XR docs a week or two ago, I used two examples. One was a volcano, learning about volcanoes activity. And then the other one was, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it doesn't matter. I don't want to use those. I want to use something unique for this podcast. So an important thing to understand before is we talked about environments a few minutes ago. FrameVR has 42 or 43, I don't know what the number is, but they have a large selection of pre-made custom environments, everything from a simple gallery with four walls and two windows up to whole campuses, right? And they serve a purpose depending on what your needs are, okay? For me, for an XR doc, I believe that you should start with a custom environment. And I know that that sounds scary, but it really is not. The FrameVR environment is a 10 by 10 grid. And you can go to tiles.framevr.io and you can actually create, drag and drop your tile, whatever features you want on that grid to create the environment that you want. Okay. So what I've been doing over the last months is trying to test that out and come up with a simple entry level workflow to meet all the needs that we've already talked about, because teachers they don't have the time or energy to go and learn Blender. But it would be nice to not use one of the off-the-shelf environments, okay? And I took the floor rugs that are common in elementary school that have, you know, a street and some blocks for. So I took that picture and I overlaid it on top of a frame environment. So I've got a 10 by 10 grid with a bunch of roads and a bunch of green space. And I built a little town with 3D models. So if I'm going to talk about an introduction to an elementary grade XR doc, for example, they need to teach directions, things like left, right, maybe some of the introduction to cardinal directions. And so the elementary student is placed in this town and has to go out and find the features that, you know, let's start slow. Just, you know, go up here and take the first left. Or what is the street sign that is coming up here on the front left? I mean, the first left. And that was one of my videos that I made last month during Immersive March Madness around Tinkercad. So just go into Tinkercad and make a template for a street sign and pound out 15 different street sign names. And in less than 20 minutes, you've got your own custom made 3D models to put in to your XR doc for directions. So that's for at the elementary grades. I think you could probably take that same model and upgrade that into the middle school, where you're going to start giving multi-step directions, probably audio only, so that they have to, you know, practice listening and maybe understand how to look for things like take a left at the church as opposed to take a left on Smith Street, stuff like that. And then get into things like north, northeast, or some of the more complex cardinal directions. Both of those environments lend themselves great to some type of escape game or scavenger hunt. So there's a gamification to it, and it would engage, you know, it would lead to engagement versus a flat 2D hyperdoc. One last thing about how to really raise the bar here is add in some spatial audio. So if they're going by the park, add some water bubbling sounds so that as they go through the fountain, they can hear that. Or when they go by the church, have the church bell rings. That's something that is unique to an XR doc in WebXR. For the upper school, one that just came to me just recently, I was flipping through Reddit. You know, what I typically do is I lurk a lot. I don't post a lot up until this last project. I literally have posted, if you look at my history on LinkedIn, I probably posted 5 times in the last 5 years before 2024. Reddit is a great place to go and listen and just hear what people are struggling with. And somebody was saying that they're going to teach the American Civil War and they're looking for something different, something a little bit more creative. So it would not be very hard to create a 3D model of the Gettysburg battlefield. And you could put 3D models of soldiers on the north side, along with some cannons and some other things to set the scene. And then on the other side, remember, we've got a 10 by 10 grid, which is actually pretty far in the frame VR environment. On the other side of the battlefield, you could have the soldiers from the south. And the user would have to go and visit each side and listen to audio transcripts of actual diaries from American Civil War soldiers about the before, the during, and the after of the Civil War. Moving back and forth, before the war, go listen to the North's perspective, walk your avatar to the other side, look across the field, and get that perspective and that feeling of what that must have felt like for the Civil War. Those are some that, that's the kind of stuff that I unfortunately stay up too late at night sometimes, is I'll just get rolling. And yes, I know that all of that sounds really, really hard, but for that Civil War one, you probably already have access to the audio transcripts. People have been doing, you know, that's not new. Those have existed online for a long time. You need an AI-generated 3D model of a Southern soldier and a Northern soldier. Super easy, quite easy. You can actually do that in Frame now. You can generate your own 3D models. And then you need a 360 sphere of the Gettysburg battlefield. That's it. That's not, you know, I know it sounded complicated if you've never seen it before, but when it comes right down to it, you could do that in an afternoon. And I promise that XR doc will lead to quite a change in the immersion for studying the Civil War.
One thing you talked about is the notion or the fact that an XR doc is a one-stop shop for a student, as opposed to, as you said before, if we look at a hyperdoc, students are clicking on something and then they've got a tab and they've got to navigate to the tab and they need to know what to do in the tab, whether that's to do something on a Padlet or maybe they have to play a Kahoot. Whereas, as I've seen in some of your video footage of XR docs and how they orchestrate the learner inside one medium or space, whether that's the Gettysburg Address experience that you just talked about or whether that's the navigating signs and the town. So I'm picturing myself as the learner. I enter the 3D environment, one of which you've already described, but then you've orchestrated it such that their instructions on what to do are all within that medium or space so that their cognitive load is down because everything's there for them. Talk a bit about that.
Yes, absolutely. The way that you described it is all possible. The text does not have to be elaborate, but you have the ability to create a text label or a text area, and that text area can be many paragraphs if you would like. When I was working at Endicott College back in 2018, 2019, I was introduced to the Universal Design for Learning format. I don't know what you want to call it, how that would be best described, but What I learned from that is you're supposed to give best practice is to give the user multiple modes to consume the information. So it would not be very hard to have a text field given the instructions with a little button right underneath that says, press this button if you would like to hear, you know, the instructions. And then you could have a video as well. Both you just recording a very simple screencast of you talking. And so those can be embedded natively within Frame VR. As you progress through forward, you scaffold up. So in hopefully over a period of time, you've introduced to the students to understand that there are certain things that they can click on and they'll get something out of it, whether it's more instructions, whether it's navigating from point A to point B. So it does allow you to wrap everything up in that same space. And it's not going to be 100%, but you can get the majority of the content that exists in today's HyperDocs. I've tested it out. You can get 90% of it and they never have to leave that tab. They are in that page for the 10, 20, 30 minutes of whatever, however long that lesson is. And we haven't even begun to talk yet. Right now, we've only been talking about them going through it as an individual. Add on the possibility to have this as a synchronous activity. Then you're starting to cook with fire, because what's the name of that VR app where one person is in VR and they see some things, but the other people are outside and they have other instructions? What's that?
Yeah. Keep talking and nobody explodes. Yep.
Yeah. So you could assimilate a similar thing there where some of the students are given certain instructions, but the other students don't have those or have a different set and they have to work together and navigate the learning experience as well. So that's how I would best organize it to lower the cognitive load. Also, another thing that we haven't talked about is the ability to create scenes. Much like a slideshow in PowerPoint or Google Slides, you know, you don't overload the first slide with every single nugget that they have to do. You slowly give them a little bit and a little bit. So in that environment that I was talking about with the elementary students and the town and the directions, you could have multiple scenes where you copy the entire environment and everything, but on scene two, there's actually a higher level of instruction that you could direct your ESL students to, or a student that might need additional learning supports. You don't have to recreate the whole thing. It's simply just taking scene one for the general education learner. Scene two is for those that need extras. And then on scene three, you could leave notes to yourself about how you did this or things that you want to do differently. So it's packaged in this one little thing. And you could just reuse that over and over.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up scenes. I love scenes. And your example to differentiate is brilliant. Another way that I found to use scenes is a before, an after, or a cause and effect. Like you could have the brilliant town that you described, and then they click on something and it launches them to a scene where that town is like down in the future, 2050. And, you know, maybe it's now showing evidence of climate change or showing evidence of lack of government. So, you know, there's garbage everywhere and so on. And so thanks for bringing up this notion of scene jumping, which can act as a great deeper thinking sort of activity. I'm mindful of time and I want to unpack a couple more things. One of the things that some people who maybe aren't learning designers like you automatically want to use these immersive platforms for is shoving content into people. Whereas you've described it more as an opportunity for what we might call in learning design or instructional design as retrieval practice, which means they already maybe have the information. Maybe they read it in a textbook, or maybe their teacher showed them outside of an immersive platform, a video, and now we want them to ruminate on it or regurgitate it through an immersive learning experience in a more maybe active way than just a passive learning experience. So let's talk about active learning. In immersive spaces, you alluded to this, there's some really highly interactive platforms like Zoe, where you can, with a click of a button, you can literally grab and pick up and make the object do something. Like if it collides with this, then something else happens. Whereas in some intermediate platforms like Frame VR, that's not possible. How important then, Eric, is it to have, like, we see some of these games that we get on Meta. These are serious learning games like Nano, where everything is interactive and, you know, you touch this and something else happens. How important is this to the learning design journey?
I don't know if you've ever seen it, but John Bergman, who's the, you know, one of the co-founders of the flipped classroom movement, has been very prominent in the educational space for quite a long time. He has an unlisted video talking about, meaning you can't search for it. And I found it many, many years ago. And when I first watched it, it's like a 2x4. It's one of those videos that after you're done watching it, you're just like, oh, wow. Okay, now I get it. And his basic premise for all of flipped classroom is the idea of moving from passive to active learning. Now, his is in how you organize your classroom and how you deliver your material. In my viewpoint, the idea that you are offering within a WebXR environment, you are offering the ability for the user to have to decide where to go and what to do. That kind of exists in a Google Doc or in a choice board, right? Lately, I've been spending a little bit of time, as opposed to HyperDocs, there's something called a choice board. So it's a single Google Doc, often with an activity in each quadrant, you know, infer, try, watch. And while I appreciate and understand giving the learner the option, there is some value there. I don't consider that very active still, because they are still just clicking and sitting back, and that's their physical only action that they have to do is to click. So I built out, in advance of this, I built out a demo environment where I took a choice board with those things, you know, infer, try, watch, and I built an arena in Frame. So the user's down on the ground floor, and there are these ramps that go up into different quarters. And they can't see what's at the top of the ramp. They have to physically walk up to the top of the ramp to see the start button. And when they click that start button, then they're going to get presented with the YouTube video, the Edpuzzle, the Padlet, whatever it is, the 3D models, whatever it is. And for me right now, I know that that sounds trivial. That doesn't sound very active when you compare it to Nano or Zoe Interactive. And I agree. However, if we're going to take small steps forward, that will, in my opinion, cognitively be a richer experience for the user. And then once you're comfortable doing that, awesome. Now you can get into the action editor in Frame and you can start creating some scenarios where if they click this, then these two other things will happen and it will open other opportunities. That's what I would consider an intermediate or an advanced level. I don't like to talk about that very often right now because I don't want people to gloss over. But start small. Start getting the user into an environment where they physically have to move from point A to point B, make some decisions. I've got another one. Actually, my example online right now, if you go to framevr.io/xrdocs, you start in a single room and there's no way out of the room initially. You have to physically click on two buttons in order for the door of the room to appear. Now, again, that's not rocket science, but it forces me to be, you know, if I'm just I don't care, 14-year-old in eighth grade, just sitting back waiting for stuff to happen and be like, Mr. Chamberlain, what do I do? Well, you have to do. you actually have to do something and the instructions are right there. So you're on your way. Go for it. And again, baby steps, scaffolding. Let's move from the passive learning of HyperDocs into the active learning of XRDocs and we'll build our way up. And while we're building our way up, by the way, Frame will come out with new advancements. They're iterating all the time. By the time you are comfortable with all of this stuff, who knows what's going to be possible in XR? Maybe there'll be another app that comes along that's better suited. I don't know. But we're not going to wait for that to come. You don't have to wait for VR to come to your school to get started now integrating immersive learning experiences.
Yeah, there's this notion, you know, this saying or cliche around our brain, and our brain is lazy. If you, you know, if you know, think of the PD that you've had as a teacher, you know, we know that active learning is important, but as teachers, we kind of moan and groan as soon as the presenter makes us get up out of our chairs and do something. That's not to say, though, that getting up out of our chairs or making us sort of work and talk through something isn't important. We just, we're almost, from an evolutionary perspective, we're almost, you know, like we just need to rest. And unfortunately, when it comes to learning science, if we don't do much and we just passively sit there and listen,
absolutely,
we don't remember it. We don't store it in our long-term memory. So, you know, Robert Bjork talks about this notion of desirable difficulties. If we make our brain work just a little bit harder than, you know, the passive state, there's a greater chance that, you know, we're going to make sense of it in a deeper way, as well as there's a greater chance we're going to store it in long-term memory. I'm mindful of time here, so I want to give you a bit of an open mic. Is there anything else maybe we haven't talked about or said that you think educators should know about XRDocs or the use of this amazing new immersive tool that you've brought up today?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for giving me this time. I've been, when I first started this journey 2 years ago, your podcast was one of the first things that I found, and I consumed, because I have a lot of time and energy and free time here, I literally consumed probably 50 episodes in a week just to get myself up to speed. And I learned a lot. And, you know, some of that stuff is legacy and it doesn't even exist anymore. It doesn't matter. Thank you for doing what you've been doing. And we could do this. I think you and I could probably talk about this literally all afternoon. First thing I'd like to talk about is, so far, even though I've tried to be vocal and offer ideas and share primarily through LinkedIn, as you pointed out, but I do have a YouTube channel, some stuff on Twitter, et cetera. I haven't had the opportunity. I don't have direct access to a lot of classroom teachers right now that I consider to be my prime target, meaning you're in a one-to-one environment. We know that that is, the numbers are off the chart. That's almost everybody in today's post-COVID world. You have an LMS, probably Google Classroom, if not one of the big three, and you are comfortable with and familiar with building a learning experience using something like a HyperDoc. If you are in that position and you would like to work with me, what I'm going to do is, when this launches, you and I are talking today, and I know it'll be a couple of days before this launches. When this launches on my website, I'm looking for 10 XRDoc pioneers. Those 10 people agree to come and take my introductory course, but they will take it with me. Right now, it's a self-paced course on my website, and I will help them build their first XRDoc just as an opportunity to work with some other people, get different perspectives, but also as a proof of concept. Right now, I sit in my office here in France, and I'm pretty excited about this thing, and I think it's going to be a pretty cool idea, but I don't have a lot of opportunity to actually put it into practice. So those people that would like, if what I just said, that sounds like you, or you know someone that it sounds like it would be a good fit for that, there'll be an opportunity on my website, xrtoolsfored.com, to apply to be one of those 10 XRDoc pioneers. Beyond that, I'm just looking forward to, you know, all the advancements. Everybody's so focused on AI, and there are some wonderful things. There are some people super focused on VR, and there are some wonderful things. But at the same time, what I think really is necessary, I think we've played it out pretty well in this 45-minute discussion, is that there's a small change that could happen, right? We're not looking to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We're not looking to tear apart everything that you've been doing. We're not chasing some shiny object in the future. Let's take what you've been doing, make a couple of small changes. But I think that those changes are going to be profound because, as you and I both know, the numbers are off the charts with how many students outside of class interact with spatial and immersive web, right? Roblox, Fortnite, and Minecraft the hundreds of millions of users every day. The kids get it. They understand. They're ready. They love interacting in that environment. And anybody that's listening to this and thinks that I want to create games in education, that's not the point. The point is to elevate yourself or make the leap. It's one of the reasons why my presentation the other day was called Make the Leap. And it is a leap, but there is this nice bridge that will help scaffold that leap. You're not going to be jumping out over the Grand Canyon by yourself. Take a small step, work with me, check out some of my stuff, and let's see where this thing goes.
Well said, and what a great way to end the show, Eric. Thanks so much for coming on, and I look forward to following you as we progress through this immersive world. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, too.
Hello, everyone. I just want to add a little caveat to part of the episode where I was unpacking active versus passive learning, and I also mentioned the work of Robert Bjork and desirable difficulties. And I want to do his work justice here. The effort that we put in to make learning slightly more challenging should be tied as close as possible to the context that we're working in. So in my example, I had said teachers loathe getting up out of their chairs. They often appreciate being able to just relax and passively consume learning. You know, getting up out of our chairs and that effort, if it has little to do with what we're learning, then Robert Bjork would say that's not really what we mean by desirable difficulty and challenge. Having a little challenge in our learning activity should be related to what we're cognitively studying. You know, so, you know, hiking up a mountain, you have to put a lot of effort in. But once we get to the top of that mountain, if we're doing something contextually different, then that effort we put in is going to have little value to what we might call desirable difficulties. Anyway, just wanted to do that justice. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.